transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, how you doing? And welcome to the show. We are so excited because actress Tatiana Ali from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, as well as her new show, Love That Girl, joins me to talk about her amazing career in entertainment. We've also got relationship coach Frank Kermit on the scene to talk about the highs and lows of Valentine's Day. Plus, makeup guru Lisa Sim is here to talk about how much is too much when it comes to putting on your face for work or play. We've also got a killer remix from Selena Gomez called A Year Without Rain. Lots to do. Let's go.
Capture your need for sound.
It's a great honor to introduce my next guest. She's a wonderful actress and singer. She has her own production company, and she's an advocate as well for youth to become leaders in their own communities. Tatiana Ali, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I am fantastic, and I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. And, you know, I'm sure most of the world knows you first as Ashley Banks, the little sister on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but I don't think they realize that the show that first got you sort of noticed was being on Sesame Street. So how old were you, Tatiana, when you landed on Sesame Street, and was it a difficult audition process for you?
Oh, my goodness. I think I was about 4 years old, and I did the show. The last episode I did of Sesame Street was when I was 10. I don't remember the audition, but I do remember some of the stuff I did. It was really fun. It was kind of like a preschool, and they would just take kids out of the little preschool area that they had for different scenes. And I was one of the well-behaved kids, so I got to sing with a group of kids with Carly Simon. I got to make faces with Sid Caesar and play with a synthesizer with Herbie Hancock. It was really fun.
That's awesome. Really, it's like a dream come true for all kids everywhere. So cool.
Oh yeah, and the puppeteers are amazing.
That's fantastic. Now, I have to ask you, Tatiana, when Fresh Prince came around, were you pre-selected for the role of Ashley, or did you actually have to audition for it?
I auditioned for it. I had done a pilot for NBC a year before, and so they kind of remembered me for that. So I was called in because of that. But yeah, I auditioned. I auditioned for Quincy Jones and all these amazing people that at the time I didn't understand. That's probably a really good thing. But I didn't understand who I was really auditioning for.
Which is probably best, like you said, so that you didn't have any added pressure. And did you and the rest of the cast, you know, have any idea how successful Fresh Prince would sort of end up being, and that it not only ended up being, you know, popular with African Americans, but, you know, with this wide audience all around the world?
No, I think I don't think anyone can really prepare for that. We knew that it was something special. Because we just gelled as a cast immediately from the very first day that we all met. And we all came from different parts of the country. I was from New York. Joseph Marcel, who played Jeffrey, he's from London. We just gelled right away. But the whole idea of, you know, the Fresh Prince, Will Smith, a rapper, starring in a TV show, that was something that was completely outside of the box and new. And, you know, you have to thank Brendan Tartikoff for that. He was the president of NBC at the time, and he was just a total visionary. But, yeah, you can never, you know, you hope that it's going to go and that you'll have a long run, but the kind of impact that Fresh Prince had, I don't think anyone was prepared for that.
And actually, a question that I wanted to ask you as well, because you literally, you know, grew up on the show, especially during those difficult, I would say, tween years for most of us. Was it difficult being, you know, because I'm sure, you know, Tatiana, it must have been hard for you to sort of walk down the street because you were so recognizable, like everybody knows who you are. Was it tough to go sort of go through those teen years, you know, with an audience watching you both on screen and off?
It was pretty awkward. I mean, I had a unibrow, I had buck teeth. So all that stuff, yeah. I had my first kiss on the show. That was embarrassing. That part was pretty difficult. And also, you know, being tutored on a set and not really, I spent a little bit of time in regular junior high school and high school, but not really as much as other people my age. So that part was different. It was really different. And I remember the first time, you know, just being recognized by a group of kids, and I thought they were coming after me for something. I didn't even realize it was because of the show. It kind of changed everything.
Wow.
And I don't look so different now, so...
They still know who you are.
I think.
Yeah, well, I've been on your website, and you just look like a little bit older than when you would have been a teenager. So I could see that everyone would still know who you are. And something that I've wanted to ask you, because you know we followed your career sort of post Fresh Prince, and it seems to us, I think in the media who follow celebrities and sort of need to know what's going on, that you have been very smart about your career and your off-camera life. And, you know, you graduated from Harvard, so you have an education. Was it hard for you to stay away from some of the pitfalls that other teen stars went through? Because, you know, we hear it, we've seen it. You know, Lindsay Lohan is just one example of being a celebrity at a young age and then having a difficult transition into adulthood. How did you manage to sort of stay unscathed? Because you seem to be a really good role model for kids out there and for other teen actors.
You know, I think people forget that we're just kids, you know? And even though there's a lot of, even as a child, I had a lot of responsibilities. You know, I had to learn my lines, I had to be professional, all those things. But I still, you know, my parents and I fought. You know, I wanted to go out where all of my other actor friends were going, and my parents were just not having that. Oh, no. They knew, you know, no was a very important word. And I think even Lindsay Lohan, when she did that Vanity Fair article, I thought it was interesting. One of the things that she said, and I think it's totally true, you need somebody to guide you. I mean, you're a kid. There's no way for you to be able to, you know, make those choices and even to make wise choices. You have to have your parents or somebody older who's really guiding you and protecting you, because you're exposed to so much. I mean, you really can get into whatever trouble you know, delights you. It's all there. It's all accessible to you. Even more, you know, kids have access to so much anyway, but, you know, multiply that by 100, and that's what it's like. So you really need parents who are, my parents didn't care about, you know, fame. I have two little sisters, and it didn't make me any different in their eyes than my sisters. I still had responsibilities at home. I had to do my schoolwork. I wasn't allowed to go out, you know, past a certain time, or it really is your parents, and I would say my family, definitely. And friends, too, who, thank God, didn't want to, profit from seeing me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From airing my dirty laundry or anything like that. It's really sad when you look around and you wonder who your friends are.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I think you've made a great point just about the fact of having grounded parents who made sure you stayed grounded and kept you focused and realized that you weren't, I guess, big in your britches, if you want to put it that way. And another question for you is, it's been well over 10 years since, you know, Fresh Prince ended. And a question, like, are you still sort of in touch with Will Smith? Because, and you can, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seemed that when you and Will were on screen together, that you guys really had an awesome connection on screen. Like, it almost seemed like you guys really were, like, you know, big brother, little sister. Has that connection, you know, continued to this day?
Yeah, definitely. He's an incredible person in my life, and is absolutely a mentor. And when my sister and I started our production company, he's one of the first people I went to, really just for advice, just as somebody to talk to. And he's always been there for me in that way, and I'm pretty sure for other cast members too. We all really liked each other, and I think that's part of what resonates with people when they watch the show. You can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we were there for, you know, weddings and the births of babies and birthday parties and stuff. They're my family.
That's really cool. And I think for all of us who were fans of the show, it's nice to know that it wasn't just on screen that you guys actually got along off screen. Joining us on the show right now is actress Tatiana Ali. She's so cool. Make sure to check her out, www.tatianaalionline.com. Now, Tatiana, not only are you an actress, but you're an accomplished singer as well, with a bunch of your songs actually doing very well when they were released, including Daydreaming and Boy, You Knock Me Out. You know, and you were also featured recently, or not, you know, two in the past on will.i.am's project Yes We Can in support of Barack Obama in 2008. Do you have any more plans to do more singing? Because I think you vibe very well and you have an audience that wants to hear you do that.
I'm actually back in the studio right now. So I'm working on it. So much has happened. Like you said, it's been 10 years. I've been through a lot of, you know, experiences in life. One thing that I love about music and I love about singing is that I get to be myself rather than be a character. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. I'm excited to just talk about what I feel now and who I am now. And I have to tell you, a huge part of me wanting to do it has been fans, people online, even on YouTube, like, singing my songs, and if I meet people in the street, they talk about music and they ask me when I'm singing again, and that's been it's been very encouraging. So yeah, I'm back in the studio.
That's awesome. Will it be, you know, 2011 release or 2012 or sort of all over the place? Not sure yet.
I'm not sure what the release is. I'm really, the first album that I did, Kiss the Sky, every song was recorded with a different producer,
okay,
which is, you know, kind of how it was done then. But this time around, I really want to work with one producer and really just find that sound that fits me perfectly. And so I'm there's so much music out there right now.
Yeah.
Like, I want it to, it has to really tell the stories. It has to tell stories and it has to be really good.
Okay.
So right now we're kind of in the finding the sound. That's the phase that we're in.
And something that you mentioned, you know, just a few moments ago, which I found fascinating, you sort of brought up the YouTube and stuff, and you know, speaking to a celebrity such as yourself, I want to know what it feels like for you, the way that social networking has taken off, because now fans can really be in contact with you. Because I know, you know, when I was younger, to sort of even get in touch with you know, like a Janet Jackson or you know, a Will Smith, like any of these people, it was so impossible. But now everyone has, you know, Twitter accounts and Facebook pages. Has it been really important for you and even your career to keep advancing by the fact that you can actually communicate with your fans, you know, safely, but at least it's a more of a direct connection?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, it's great to know what people are responding to, what they like, what they don't like. I know for me personally, just, you know, the words of encouragement that people,
right.
people put out there is just so amazing. I mean, if they're, and I've definitely had times, especially when I, right after I got out of college, there were times when I thought, oh my gosh, it was hard. I wasn't working. I wasn't sure which way I was going or if I was going the right way. And listening, seeing what fans were writing at that time, you know, MySpace was the biggest thing. Seeing what fans were writing gave me so much encouragement to just keep going, keep moving forward. And just knowing that there are people out there that appreciate what you're doing it's awesome. I mean, you know, if you're lucky if you have your mom being like, go ahead, baby, it's okay. That's cool. But to actually have fans that you can hear right away, you know, you don't have to wait for the mail to come if it does come. There's nothing like it.
Well, that's fantastic, because I think a lot of us, you know, who are not in the circle that you know, you would be in that sort of inner sanctum of entertainment, I think it's nice to know that celebrities appreciate, you know, our support. And do you like to respond back directly to your fans, like off Twitter? Because I know you have a fairly active Twitter account.
Oh yeah, I love it. I you know, sometimes I retweet things and you know, I'll share my comments. But there are a lot of times where people, sometimes I just reply privately, because I think it's really nice for somebody to go out of their way to say, oh hey, I watched that episode of you know, love that girl, or whatever they're talking about. Way to go, I laugh, you know, at KO. That's, I don't know, that means that to me, if I'm going to take the time out to do that.
That's awesome. And actually, I'm glad you brought up, you know, your show, Love That Girl, because it seems like you've been extremely busy in, you know, I want to say the last year, year and a half, because you had your online show, the web series Buppies, and now Love That Girl. You know, you're the lead character in this show. How great is it to be the star of the show? And it must be a lot of hard work if your production company is also involved behind the scenes as well. So does, Tatiana Ali have any time for herself these days? Because it seems like you are super busy.
It's amazing. You know how they say everything comes when it's supposed to and when you're prepared. I think I've been prepared for it. I have to tell you, starring in a show, it's very much an ensemble, but the level of responsibility and the different hats that I'm wearing, I just kind of jumped into it and I didn't realize how much it would be. But it's awesome. I feel like even producing has made me a better actor. And all of the years of acting since I was 4 years old, being on set has definitely taught me what I need to know in as far as production goes. But no, it's great. I'm loving it. And yeah, I have time. You know, I make time, and I'm not a big partier anyway. So
so work is good for you.
Yeah, work is good. I'm kind of a dork. You know, I read when I'm not.
I think your fans are going to love knowing that Tatiana Ali is a dork and likes to read. I think that's awesome. And actually, a question for you as well. What do you say, Tatiana, to kids or young adults who want to follow in your footsteps? Because I really do think that you've been just an awesome role model, because, again, there's so many teen stars. And I don't even want to fault them because, again, you mentioned that you had such wonderful parents who kept you grounded, and maybe some of these other celebrities didn't have that. So, you know, you've managed to really come through well. What do you say to kids who want to, you know, be the next Tatiana Ali?
Oh, my goodness. I would say be the first blank,
okay,
whatever your name is. It's the easiest thing to do in this business, and I don't even think it's just in this business. I think it's anything in life, is, you know, people automatically want to be safe, and they want to bet on something that's already been.
Okay.
So they'll ask you, you know, you're asked to compromise yourself a lot. And unfortunately, what that does is that takes away the thing that makes you special, that makes you unique, and that'll make you stand out. And so through whatever, you know, trials you go through in achieving, reaching your dream and reaching your goals, don't ever lose sight of who you are, ever. It might take a little bit longer to get there, but once you do get there, it'll last longer because you'll be you.
That's fantastic. I think that's a great message. And I have to ask you, again, so busy. You're in the studio again. You've got your amazing show, Love That Girl, going on. But what's next for you, you know, in the next, you know, before I would have asked, you know, a celebrity, what's next for you in the next, you know, 5 years, but things seem to be happening at breakneck speed these days. So what's coming up for you in the next 12 months to 18 months?
The next 12 to 18 months, well, we have another 13 episodes to shoot of Love That Girl. So I'm really focusing on that. And honestly, being in the studio, I really love the process of doing Buffy's. I love the web. So we have a couple of web projects in development that we're working on. So I think those three things. But mostly for right now, it's Love That Girl and being in the studio. I'm having so much fun.
That's awesome. And I can't let you go without asking you, you know, because I know you mentioned that you would like to work with one producer, and I understand that because I know that it's like you want to have that sound, like you said, and have like a, almost like a complete piece of artwork that you've completed without having a bunch of different puzzle pieces. Do you have a producer in mind? Is there a dream producer that you'd like to work with? Because I know, you know, the hot guy out there right now for a lot of urban music is Rodney Jerkins.
Oh, yeah. Rodney Jerkins did Daydreamin'.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So would you like, would he be someone that you would like to work with from start to finish, or is there someone else? I can understand if you can't tell me, but I just feel like there's so many awesome producers out there that would sort of, I think, yeah. Cultivate your sound. Do you have like ideas out there who you would want to be with?
I do, and I'm actually talking to somebody now that I hope works out. So I'm not going to say who it is, but if you're listening, like, cross your fingers.
Fantastic. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. You've been awesome.
Oh, thank you so much, Kelly.
That's actress, singer, and businesswoman Tatiana Ali. Make sure to check out her show, Fantastic. It's called Love That Girl on TV One, as well as her website, www.tatianaalionline.com. Love and relationships can be challenging at the best of times, but throw in Valentine's Day and you've got a whole other can of worms going on. To help us sort out some of the highs and lows of Valentine's Day is relationship coach Frank B. Kermit. Frank, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, it's great to be here as always.
Frank, if we jump into the deep end of the pool right off the bat, What do you do if you are alone on Valentine's Day and you know on some level it's going to bother you?
The rule is, if you are completely alone on Valentine's Day, get out of the house. Go someplace, because everybody who's alone on Valentine's Day, who's going out on Valentine's Day, is interested in meeting someone. That someone could be you.
So out of the house, out to social type places, coffee shops, wherever.
Bookstores are great.
Bookstores are great. Okay.
Bookstores are great because nobody wants to go out on Valentine's Day looking like they want to meet somebody, because that could get give off an impression that they're either desperate or really lonely or very needy, and that's not attractive.
Do you stay away from bars, Frank? Like, or is that just like a beacon of I'm desperate?
I wouldn't stay away from bars. If you're a bar person and it's a place you normally go to socialize, by all means, go to a bar. I've often heard that people now are doing anti-Valentine's Day parties, anti-Valentine's Day outings. Well, they'll go out with a group of people saying, boy, I really hate Valentine's Day. And they'll go out together to drink or whatnot. That's a horrible attitude to have, because it puts you in the frame of mind that if somebody does approach you and want to start a conversation, you might blow them off because you're already in such a resentful frame of mind.
Okay.
And that's not attractive.
No, not attractive. And Frank, I think a lot of people put pressure on themselves around Valentine's Day. For example, if they are not in a relationship, it just seems that this day sort of desperately makes them want to find someone and you know, maybe make some sort of rash decision. Or consequently, if they are in a relationship that potentially is not going well, it may make them want to end things. So how do you handle these two extremes?
Okay, let's look at the first one. Valentine's Day can often be a day of reflection. It sneaks up on you because you're so busy with school, you're so busy with work, you're so busy with other things going on in your life, family obligations. Next thing you know, hey, wait a minute, it's Valentine's Day. And when you get to the day, you realize, oh no, I'm alone. Now, for some people, it doesn't bother them. They take Valentine's Day, it's just another day of the year, and if you have someone to share it with, have fun. And if you don't, that's okay. For other people, when Valentine's Day becomes that day of reflection, that's where they start doing an assessment. Why am I alone? How did this happen? Doesn't anybody like me? Doesn't anybody want me? Oh, I feel so lousy. What am I going to do now? Well, I don't feel like going out now because I'm feeling lousy. You got to remember that Valentine's Day is one of the best days of the year to start making plans. Now, if you really don't want to go out, stay at home, make up a plan, and start planning for your next Valentine's Day. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but all of those things you've been loving to do, wanting to do, start planning it now. Well, I've always wanted to learn how to dance. It's Valentine's Day, start making a plan. Okay, next week I'm going to go check out the different dance schools, and I'm going to sign up for a dance class. That's what I did when I ended up very alone on a Valentine's Day, thinking, I don't want to be alone next Valentine's Day. So I started drawing up a plan of all those things I've always said I wanted to do, just never took the initiative, never made time. It's right after a very lonely Valentine's Day, I went out and I took some dance lessons, knowing that the following Valentine's Day, I didn't want to be alone.
And then consequently, Frank, if you're on the other end of things where, again, you are in a relationship and it's not going well, Do you, I don't think you should be making that decision on Valentine's Day or anywhere near that sort of week. You know what I mean?
Well, as someone who in my younger days would have people break up with me on Valentine's Day, I can tell you it can be very devastating. But like I said, Valentine's Day is sometimes a day of reflection for people. They get to Valentine's Day and they think to themselves, you know, the only reason I'm with you is because I don't feel I can get anybody else. But I want to know what's out there. I want to know what other options are there. So is it fair? Is it right? Well, it's not right to, you know, just tough out Valentine's Day and break up 2 or 3 days later. If you're not happy in a relationship, try communicating to your partner. See where it goes.
But Frank, a question for you, you know, because again, like you said, Valentine's Day brings up a lot of emotions and reflections and all that sort of stuff. Could it be, though, like a breakthrough day for you if you do really realize, like you look across at your partner and you're like, nope? Like, so you're saying it could actually be, even though it would be maybe upsetting or devastating for the person that you don't want to be with, for yourself, it might actually be a breakthrough moment.
In my mind, and this is one of the beliefs I have in terms of ethical dating, everyone has the right to seek out their soulmate without interference. If Valentine's Day is that tap on your shoulder, that wake-up call, that you're with the wrong person, the ethical thing to do is to free that person so that they can find someone that wants to be with them and for you to go out and find someone that you want to be with. You know, the idea that, oh, I don't want to hurt the other person, that isn't fair to the other person. Because the bottom line is, you don't really want to be with them. And if you keep them with you, you're preventing them from finding someone that loves them more than you do.
Joining us on the show is relationship coach Frank B. Kermit. You can check him out at www.franktalks.com. Frank, I think a lot of us get caught up in Cupid's arrow, you know, and Valentine's Day, that's just bang, right in the target center. Is Valentine's Day, you know, a time to admit a secret crush on someone?
I don't believe in admitting secret crushes, ever. And Valentine's Day is that one day where so many people are on the receiving end of, well, I've liked you for all this time. Well, unless the person already has given signals that they like you back just as much, all you're doing is putting undue pressure on someone. You know, let's say you've been friends with that person for, I don't know, you know, 3 or 4 months, and all you've been is friends, and you've always kept your feelings hidden. Is it really fair to that person to just come right out and say, it's Valentine's Day, I have to confess my love for you? Well, now, if the person already likes you, then you're lucky, and you can have a nice Valentine's Day. But if the person is even if they like you a little bit, but they aren't sure, to land that on them, that kind of pressure, like, oh boy, this person is madly in love with me, has been thinking about that all that time, has been thinking about the potential for us. Well, I haven't even gone down that path with you yet. Putting that kind of undue pressure isn't right. I would say that if you really like somebody, don't wait for Valentine's Day. Feel the person out. Test them. Find out if you actually could have something romantic with them. And if you like, set up a date for Valentine's Day. And if they say, sure, let's go out on Valentine's Day, that would be great. You know, we'll go to a movie. We'll go out for coffee. We'll go out to dinner, whatever. They're at least saying, yeah, I would be interested in exploring that with you. But to just surprise someone and say, I love you, that isn't fair to the other person because you're putting them on the spot. And most times, someone will back off and say, whoa, that doesn't necessarily mean no, but it does mean it's uncalibrated.
Now, Frank, how does someone change their outlook if they are alone on Valentine's Day, where, you know, in the past, it would have just caused them to dive off the ramp and right into Haagen-Dazs? Like, how can a person themselves see their love life differently on Valentine's Day? Because I know you mentioned, you know, if you've already put yourself in a negative frame of mind, you're sending off those type of vibes. So how do you change that?
Okay, well, the first thing you have to accept is that if you're alone on Valentine's Day, it's because you want to be. You actually have made the choice to be alone. And sometimes not taking decisions in other areas of your life are the same type of choices that you've made to be alone on Valentine's Day. And I know this sounds like, you know, very esoteric and whatnot, so let me give you some concrete examples. If I really want to have someone in my life, I will make an effort to go out and meet as many new people as possible. I will structure a social life so that I have a circle of friends who I can call on and say, hey, let's go out to that new movie together. Hey, let's go out to this new restaurant. You want to be able to be the type of person that says yes when someone calls you out and says, I'm going there, would you like to come? Be the yes person. Say yes. Go out. Meet people. If there's an area of your life that you don't feel good about, whether it's your own appearance, your own health, or maybe just the fact that you've never really gone for something you were passionate about, those are the types of things you need to be working on, because those are the types of things that transmit attraction. The fact that you are an attractive person to someone else.
Okay.
So you got to come to terms with the fact that if you're alone on Valentine's Day, don't wallow in self-pity. Find out why you chose to be alone. This is why I say if you're alone on Valentine's Day and you don't like it, get out of the house. Because if you're not at least getting out of the house, you want to be alone. Some people, and I know this is going against, you know, popular culture, but some people like being miserable.
Right. Yeah, I believe that. I totally believe that. Now, on a positive sort of angle, Frank. If you are in a relationship, you know, how should you celebrate the day? Because I think a lot of people view Valentine's Day as, you know, like a Hallmark holiday where it's been forced upon us and people just want us to buy something in red. Should you make a deal of it, or do you treat it as low key, or, you know, and I know probably one of the answers you would say is that Valentine's Day should be, you know, every month. Like, you should always be showing love, you know, throughout your relationship throughout the year. But like on that specific day, should you go low key? Should you make it a deal?
Well, here's the way I see it. If you can financially afford it, both of you in the relationship should try to take that day off of work and just spend the day together doing whatever it is you like doing together. So if you're in a financial position to do that, where, okay, it's Valentine's Day, but I'm going to take the day off work and so are you, if you can make that happen, that's what I usually recommend to people who are in serious relationships. Now, barring that, if you do have to go to work and you have other obligations that doesn't allow you to celebrate Valentine's Day on that day, try to celebrate it the Sunday before, the Saturday next. Make some time to say, I am going to spend that time with you. It's sad that as a society, we need a holiday or a day on the calendar to remind us to show affection. It really is. And like you said, in an ideal world, we would be doing this every day, every month. But it's not an ideal world. There are realities. Most people are struggling just to get by day to day. We're all tired. We're all exhausted. We all have obligations, rent to pay. The kids need attention. But that one day is there to remind us, hey, I know you're busy. I know you're tired. But today's the day or the week where we're going to give you a little nudge just to show the person you care about some affection and remind them why they're special to you. Do you have to go out and buy lots of flowers and candy and chocolates and, you know, decorate the house with red hearts? If it makes you happy and you have the time, go for it. But Valentine's Day is not about the gifts that you buy a person. It's about reminding that person why they're special to you. Some people can only feel that on the receiving end of gifts. Some people just need someone to come up from behind them, give them a warm hug, and say, you are my everything.
Okay. And Frank, to sort of wrap things up, you know, I just wanted to sort of ask you what your biggest piece of advice is, I guess, for both people alone and, you know, people in relationships. Like, I know we've sort of discussed it, you know, piecemeal throughout our chat here, but I'm sure because you have so much knowledge about all of this sort of stuff, what two points stick out for you for, again, people alone, people in a relationship?
Okay, for people alone, you've chosen to be alone, get out of the house, go meet people. Valentine's Day is the one day where everybody who's out is hoping to meet somebody to spend the day with to make them feel special. It's a good day to try new experiences. One of the best Valentine's Day I ever had when I was alone, I decided, I'm alone, it's Valentine's Day, every person that I was seeing has ended up with someone more special than me for them, that's fine. I went to a fetish club for the first time on Valentine's Day. Great experience. I met some new people, and I learned a lot about that community. For people who are already in relationships, it depends what kind of relationship you're in. If you're in a very serious monogamous relationship where you're not dating anybody else and the two of you are looking to build a future together, if you can afford it, take the day off. Spend it together. If you can't, try to do something special in that week. For people who are casually dating, maybe they're dating two or three people, but no one is really the type of person that they want to spend the rest of their lives with, I would recommend that you see each of the people that you're seeing casually on different days that week, but on Valentine's Day, go out alone, see if you can find your soulmate.
Fantastic. Frank, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Kelly, it's great as always, and you always know that I'm ready to do the Kelly Alexander Show.
Fantastic. That's Frank B. Kermit, again, a relationship coach. And for more information, make sure you check him out. He's awesome. www.franktalks.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Ladies, as you know, for the most of us, makeup is an integral part of our existence, and the amount that you wear can speak volumes about yourself. To help us understand the right amount to use for our complexion is Lisa Sim, founder of Sim Minerals Makeup. Lisa, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey.
Now, Lisa, the way that makeup looks on us as women can speak volumes about, you know, sort of who we are. What steps should a woman take to understand what look is best suited for her when it comes to makeup?
You're going to be looking at your skin tone, you're going to look at your eye color, you're going to look at your hair color, you're going to find things that are complementary to that, that are going to enhance your most desirable feature. So if it's your lips, play up your lips. If it's your eyes, do up your eyes, you know. But don't throw it all together in one big jam and, like, have it just screaming out all over the place.
Okay, and actually just something that I didn't even realize but you brought up is the hair color, which I assume is a big issue about the makeup. And a question with that is if you've, let's say, had blonde hair, you know, for a lengthy portion of your life, and all of a sudden you're trying to be different and you go brown, like a dark brown, or God forbid you head out to black, but that's going to change how you've been doing things for years, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times what I see happening is that girls that go from blonde into, like, darker tones, they end up looking really washed out with their regular makeup. So they tend to have to, like, you know, supplement it, add a warmer tone to it, maybe a little bit of bronzer, things like that. So they, you know, just warm up their skin tone a little bit.
Okay. And another question with regards to appearance and sort of along those lines, do different occasions call for a different makeup look?
Absolutely. I think there's a difference between going to the corner store and getting some milk and, like, going to, like, a cocktail party in the evening.
Okay. And then how would you handle it, Lisa, if you are, you know, I know we've passed sort of, you know, Christmas season and the office work party, but throughout the year there are work functions that you have to go to. So how do you deal with the fact that, you know, you're going to work and then you're not going to have time to go home and you have to go out to, let's say, a Sanka set or, you know, happy hour? How do you handle that?
Okay, I think there's just, like, a basic survival items that you really need to have when you're at work. So let's say an extra pair of shoes, like keeping some hosiery around, having some accessories on hand, keeping a mirror in your office, having a little bit of makeup on hand when you just need to, like, you know, you gussy up a little bit before you head out. So there's a difference between, you know, what you should be wearing into work and what you should be doing before you head out. And I think there is a thing where it's like, you know, there is such a thing as too much. So when you're doing your makeup in the morning, I highly recommend working with natural light. Or if you're going to be in your bathroom afterwards, just, you know, check it over. Go into some, like, natural available light. Head outside. Just make sure that you don't have, like, some strong demarcation line. Sometimes on the jawline, people forget to, like, blend out their foundation. You know, same thing with blush. You can kind of get heavy-handed on it. When we head out into natural light, it ends up looking like racing stripes. You know, maybe saving the shine and the shimmer and stuff like that for the evening versus daytime, you know, like workplace, unless you are a burlesque dancer, mm-hmm. you may want to opt away from, like, the shimmer and shine, sparkles and glitter and all that, and save that for, like, the more festive part of the evening.
And, you know, I think you've made a good point with sort of people taking stock of what they're doing to themselves, because something that I've noticed, and it, for some reason, I don't know if it's just jumping out at me more recently, but I've seen in the last couple of weeks, I've been out at a store. I was out in the grocery market. I saw one of the clerks, for lack of a better word, like, she looked like she was a circus clown. Like, there was way too much going on there. And she was young. She was, like, you know, maybe 18, 19, you know, and there was way too much going on. And it upset me for her, because I'm like, who taught you how to do this? And why on God's green earth do you think you have to put on 6 pounds of makeup? Like, how much is too much, Lise?
I call that the Ronald McDonald syndrome.
Right.
And you know what is scary is it says, you know, people really believe that they look awesome like that. You know, it's just like, you know, in terms of, like, how we dress. Sometimes we've seen women and men who are dressed, you know what I mean, like they're still in 1974 because it was, like, the highlight of their lives. So it was, like, the you know, they felt the best at that point. So if it means that they're going to have, like, you know, like, Tammy Faye face, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, lots of, like, heavy lip liner and, like, the spider leg eyelashes. You know, it just means, like, that's when they were feeling the best. It just doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't match with, like, contemporary, like, with the times right now. It's a hard call. Why they do that, I feel it's, like, online in par with, like, body dysmorphia, you know?
Right, okay. And, like, how would you, like, right now for, you know, my fantastic women listeners, how do you, like, do you think there's some sort of button inside yourself that, you know, maybe right now as they're listening to this going, maybe I put on too much or maybe I don't put on enough, but, like, do you think there's some sort of barometer that you can ask yourself so that you don't turn into a circus clown?
Yeah, I mean, I've fallen victim to my own hands at makeup, where it's like, I'll put it on, and then once you kind of like step back and look at yourself from a more objective stance, and all of a sudden you realize, okay, yeah, that could be too much. Or when the makeup starts doing things, like melting off your face, or just migrating, like too much foundation, it's going to end up in all the fine lines. Too much lip liner, and it's going to bleed out. Too much eyeliner, and that same thing, you know, mascara and eyeliner has a tendency to run. If the blush is going on top of the foundation, and you haven't really let it dry yet or settle, it ends up just being like kind of blotchy and racing stripes. So if you can kind of, you know, do a little checklist of like things that could potentially go wrong, I have a couple of things that I do recommend for women, though, if you want to hear.
Yeah, go ahead.
Of what to do with their foundation. So foundation-wise, if you don't want to overdo it, I say dilute it with a little bit of water or moisturizer and use a foundation brush opposed to using your fingers, because the brush, a nylon synthetic bristle brush, will act like tiny fingers pushing the product into the skin so it adheres better. It's better it will stay put longer, and you will need less product to have a nice finish to it. When it comes to the blush, so you can avoid over-applying there, dilute it, dip into a little bit of loose powder first with your powder brush, and then pick up the blush. And that way, you'll have a more gradual buildup of color. You won't have, like, too much of a hard line. When it comes to your mascara, I mean, yeah, maybe I'm a little bit biased. You can go as much mascara as you want. But maybe what I would say is use a lash comb afterwards to separate the lashes and to pull the clumps out. Let's say for eyeliner, if you really want to avoid it from like running down and bunching up, I call it the sandwich technique, where it's like a little bit of powder, whether it be eyeshadow on a base, as a base for the eyeshadow on the lid first. Then go with your eyeliner or pencil and make sure it's well sharpened, because you'll end up over applying sometimes if you have a dull edge and you're just trying to like jam it on. And then seal it with another eyeshadow in the same color as the eyeliner that you're using. So that's a way of, you know, giving it some kind of, you know, long-lasting, you know, but at the same time not over-applying in that case. And in terms of the lips, you know, we all know this one, blot it.
Right.
Blot. Put it on, take off, pull out the excess moisture or the excess oils that may be in the lip color, so it just deposits the color, and then you'll prevent it from, like, doing that Ronald McDonald thing that I was talking about before.
And just a question, Lisa, for, you know, people, you know, women, all of us who have been doing makeup for ourselves for, you know, X amount of years. Do you suggest that at least, you know, once in the next while, or, you know, once every 3 years or whatever, you go to, like, some sort of professional makeup artist to sort of almost like it's almost like going to school, like just to sort of re-get yourself up with the trends and also not to be too trendy, but to at least maybe just sort of up your skills and rethink how you're doing things. Do you think that's
a good
thing to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't want to get stuck, everybody, you know, including myself, so we can really get stuck in this rut. I mean, that's why, you know, a lot of women, you look at your lip glosses and your lipsticks, and it's like all variations on a theme. It's all that like pinky beige with a little bit of shine in it, but it's like from like 20 different brands. So it is a good thing to go in and get a little bit of an update. And also what I recommend is taking pictures as well, or sometimes taking pictures out of magazines and saying, you know what, I kind of like that look. I'd like to try this look. So that's something you can go into the makeup counter with and be like, you know what, I'd be interested in exploring, you know, this type of look. See, it's very hard. So it's so subjective. It's very hard to, like, get the verbiage on how to describe what it is you're looking for. So sometimes, you know, images speak volumes in that case. What I've been doing is that I have this little event that I've been doing. It's called Light Manifesto, called Passport 2011. And this is a really cool idea, where it's just a way for women to document how they're looking at this time. But at the same time, I'm updating them, updating the look, showing them techniques on how to, like, get the most out of their own facial features.
That's
so
amazing.
So that's another thing. Is like, get some good images afterwards so that you can say, yay or nay, was this working, you know, on this occasion? Oh, I like how I looked, you know, from New Year's Eve. But can I recreate that, you know what I mean, even though I had somebody else do it for me?
Fantastic. And people can check that out, simminerals.com.
Is that there's nothing on simminerals.com for the Light Manifesto, but if they are on the famous Facebook, they can go to Light Manifesto Passport 2011 and they can check out images there. and they can find out how they can contact for more information.
That's amazing. Lisa, I really appreciate you being on the show with us today, and I can't wait to have you back. Thank you.
Kelly, awesome. Thank you.
That's Lisa Sim, founder of Sim Minerals Makeup. Again, check them out, www.simminerals.com.
Bring on the remix.
That's Selena Gomez, A Year Without Rain, the Eric Cupper remix on The Kelly Alexander Show. Also, Tatiana Ali with her hit song from the late 90s, Boy, You Knock Me Out, featuring Will Smith. And a big shout out to actress Tatiana Ali for joining us on the show this week. It was so much fun to chat with her. She's so sweet, as you can tell. And best of luck to her with regards to her new show, Love That Girl, as well as her new album that she's working on. And hopefully we'll have her on as soon as that new album is ready to be released. Also, want to thank our relationship coach, Frank Kermit, again for his wonderful advice regarding how you spend your Valentine's Day this year. Very important advice that he gave out. And check him out, franktalks.com. Lisa Sim, my girl, makeup guru, as I call her. Amazing advice for us ladies regarding the makeup department. Knowing when too much is too much and when, you know, when is when, you know, it's not enough. So again, check her out, simminerals.com. She has amazing advice, again, with regards to the makeup department. Also, I want to give you a little bit of a preview for next week's show. Our pop culture expert, Eve Thomas, will be here to discuss some amazing ideas for Valentine's Day. You'll never guess what she's come up with. It's awesome. Some serious gifts, really, to spoil your honey. So that'll be next week on the show. And also, an important quote this week coming from an amazing athlete who just celebrated his 50th birthday, Mr. Wayne Gretzky. And he says, quote, "You'll always miss 100% of the shots you don't take," end quote. A very, very good quote from Mr. Gretzky. And again, happy birthday, Wayne. Can't believe you're 50. You don't look a day over 40. So have a great week. Again, any comments or questions, kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. Make sure to check out our Facebook page as well as our Twitter. And you and I will chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.